AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. October 1 started the new year for the National Corn Growers Association, and that means a new president. We'll get to know him today, and we'll talk about the financial health of the ag industry and what growers are doing now to prepare for the future.
Live from 10-5 Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Alan Hoskins, President and National Sales Director, American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services. Then it's Chris Edgington, President-elect from the National Corn Growers Association, and later, Dr. Baya Lasky, Chief Medical Director of Biomedical Services at the American Red Cross. Right after the news, Karen Boner from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Whew. Hey, thank you so much, buddy. How are things going today, man?
Good. I think I've already misstepped just a little bit. Chris Edgington, President of the National Corn Growers Association. I think I said President-elect. I was thinking of yesterday's conversation with the President-elect of the National Pork Producers Council.
There you go. I got it.
Is a whole separate thing. It's the separations in life, you know.
You know, they are separate, but they are similar in that they are producer organizations. I get it. I get it, man. It's all good.
You get me, don't you? I appreciate that about you.
I do.
It's 10-5 day. 10-4 day seemed a little too obvious yesterday, so I'm just going to make it completely obscure and call it 10-5 day today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, all the problems that they had with Facebook yesterday.
With the problems.
I mean, it was kind of an international incident with Facebook down for like 5 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
Our good friend Garrett Toy, Ag Trader Talk on Twitter.
Yes.
Tweeted out yesterday afternoon. He said, I'm on Channel 22 on my walkie-talkie if anybody else is out there. I mean, oh my, that was really good. Good one, Garrett. Shout out.
Good one,
that
Garrett.
That was really good. Really good.
Well, and does it look
we should celebrate Walkie-Talkie Day every October 4th. Doesn't that make
every
sense?
Every October 4th should be Walkie-Talkie Day.
I
think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it does.
Big Apple, write that down. Write it down. Put it in the big green leafy book of AgriTalk.
Oh, man. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We've got a big show. We're going to be talking with Alan Hoskins from American Farm Mortgage. It's good to just kind of tap into Alan's brain from time to time to see what people are thinking about and some of the goals that they might have for their finances through the end of the year. We are into the fourth quarter of the year. It may be the first quarter of business for some of the farms out there. What are some of the things that we need to be thinking about? And, of course, we'll get to know Chris, new president at NCGA, and we'll talk about blood drives at the end of the show. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, World Weather Inc. reports a significant round of precipitation is likely for the Northern Plains October 10 through 12, which is expected to boost soil moisture. The Weather Watcher reports rain and snow are expected, with most of the snow expected for Montana and possibly the western Dakotas. Here it comes, buddy boy.
Well, it's that time of the year. Let's go.
Oil prices hit a 7-year high after OPEC Plus agreed Monday to a 400,000 barrel per day supply hike scheduled for November after speculation going into the talks was that they would opt for a larger supply increase. Meanwhile, prices for the U.S. benchmark, that's a WTI crude, hit their highest level since 2014, while Brent recorded its highest settling price in 3 years.
Yeah, well, this next story. Yeah. Keep going here.
They're together. Yeah. India has warned it only has 4 days of coal reserves left. German power plants are running out of fuel. And China, get this, just unloaded an Australian coal shipment despite an import ban and frigid relations. According to the EIA, average daily U.S. crude production has been 6.7% lower than last year, while commercial stockpiles of crude, excluding the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, are off by 15% compared to last year.
Yeah, energy. Energy is going to be a huge story last quarter of the year and in 2022. I mean, it, to the point that it's going to be a driving factor for so many of the markets out there and so much of what we do. I mean, we talk about how already we're starting to see some space open up on shelves at Walmart, at Costco, at the big boxes.
Right.
And it's because we can't get it there because of costs. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be a huge deal.
Well, President Joe Biden warned that the U.S. government is at risk of breaching the legal limit on its debt in 2 weeks, blaming Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell for what he described as a meteor headed for the economy. Biden demanded that Republicans stop blocking Democratic efforts to suspend the debt ceiling. President Joe Biden told a group of progressives and members of the House leadership yesterday he is open to setting income limits for some of the programs in his social spending bill to lower the price tag. During the virtual meeting, Biden also reiterated that he expects the legislation would eventually fall into the range of $1.9 to $2.2 trillion. We had somebody on that said those exact numbers like 2 weeks ago. I can't even remember who it was.
Was it Wiesmeyer? I think it was Wiesmeyer.
I don't know who it was. I don't think it was Wiesmeyer. I would remember Wiesmeyer.
Oh.
Another Chinese developer has fallen into crisis. Fantasia Holdings Group failed to repay a maturing bond, adding to the strains of the nation's heavily leveraged property firms. Growth Energy has requested the U.S. Supreme Court review a decision by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals that vacated EPA's approval of selling E15 fuel year-round. And Canada has raised the dispute over the Line 5 pipeline to the national level by invoking Article 6 of some transit pipelines treaty from the 70s. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's go ahead and bring in Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you, Karen?
I'm great. How are you, Chip?
Doing real good. Okay, you're fresh back from the World Dairy Expo. You had a chance to sit down with DMI CEO Tom Gallagher for what might have been one last time. Tell us about it.
Yeah, for sure. So it was a great opportunity. We talked about a lot of things, including his recent announcement that he'll retire from his three-decade tenure as CEO to embark, of course, on other opportunities. But the announcement made by DMI also shared that Barb O'Brien, who is the current president, Chip, of DMI and CEO of the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, will be passed the baton, and she'll be the next CEO of DMI. It was really good to sit down and visit with Tom. He also says that dairy farmers are in good hand with this new appointment of O'Brien, stating that she's worked alongside him for the past 21 years and has been a part of all the major decisions. When talking about what kind of legacy he'll leave behind at DMI, he says that he hopes it's one that he delivered the mission of increased sales and trust. He's overseen, as most know, the creation of several organizations that have been a vehicle that has been brought unity to dairy. But what I really felt was neat was, as we talked about a lot of things that he's done over the last three decades and of all the contacts he's made, really working with the U.S. dairy farmers rises to the top for what was the most important to him. And as we talked about this, he said he revealed to me that his father was a Chicago fireman and his mother was a waitress. And he notes that the values that his parents illustrated, being honest, hardworking, integrity, are the very same values that American dairy farmers illustrate day to day. And this has been a driving reason that he stayed for three decades because of the aligned value system. So there's a lot of things going right, for dairy. But Tom Gallagher also said that there's a lot of challenges that presented for dairy, including that outdated pricing system. So we're working on coming up with a plan and agreeing to a plan to make make dairy
Got
better.
Got it, Karen. Thank you so much. That's Karen Bonert.
A little cold weather never hurt anybody, but with typical number two diesel, it can do a number on your field equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. That's how Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster Seasonally Enhanced optimizes cold weather performance. Or stick with your fair weather friend, typical number two. Your choice. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us today. We've got a lot of ground to cover today, Davis.
That's a Big Ten 5, good buddy.
Okay,
works just as good.
I'll get used to it. I'll get used
works
to it.
Works just as good.
All right. Let's bring in Alan Hoskins. He is the president of American Farm Mortgage and Financial Services down in Louisville. And he joins us right now. Alan, how are you? Welcome back to AgriTalk.
Chip, thanks for being here. Davis's comment about 10-5, that really takes me back in time. I'm from the CB era. I remember those days.
Well, yeah, I'm sure 10-5 already means something, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yep. I mean, I think it means something about relaying a message, okay? So let's go ahead and relay a message.
Hey, that's
from
not bad. That
Alan
works.
Out from Alan out to the listeners. Let's 10-5 this. All right. Oh man, how you doing, Alan? Everything good?
Everything's good, Chip. Everything's good. We're moving forward with the harvest down here in this area, and fortunately, we've seen some really good yields coming in. Prices have certainly been kind to us, particularly in relation to where they were this time last year. So I would say there's a lot of positives going on right now.
All right, good. So what do you make of the current conditions in agriculture, Alan? What's the financial health out there?
Sure. Well, first of all, obviously with the yields and the prices, and with fertilizer prices being where they were in 2021, I think we're going to see some working capital increases again this year. We saw that begin in 2020, and I believe that for a good portion of producers, we're going to see that, at least in our area, continuing here in 2021. Also, we're seeing equity increases. If you look at the financial statement, if you do market value adjustments for both land and equipment, which is something that, you know, historically, you know, when you're not trading equipment, there's not been a lot of market value increases. But if you look at the trend in equipment prices, yeah, I would argue that there's some increased equity there. You know, obviously the thing that with equity increases that I think is important, and everyone knows this, is you don't go to the grocery store and buy a gallon of milk with equity. You're buying it with cash. But certainly, if you're looking at financing opportunities or just the overall market value strength or health of the operation, there's some positives there, both with equipment and land as well.
Right. Yeah, it more than ever before, well, not more than ever before, but we are definitely back to a point in agriculture where the balance sheet looks really good. There may not be a huge amount of cash in the account, but the balance sheet looks pretty good, doesn't it?
It does. And I think, Chip, we will see that working capital increasing this year simply because of what's going on. So the balance sheets are definitely, as a whole, on an upward trend.
Okay, very good. So for farmers that are in a healthy financial position, What are their goals right now, Alan? What are they doing?
Well, and I'm glad you phrased that the way you did, Chip, because that's what I want to talk about is the folks that are the financially healthy. Okay. Some of the consistent things that I'm seeing, and also with other bankers that I talk to, those financially healthy farmers are in a strategic growth mode. Not just a growth mode, but they're looking at what really makes sense in growing the operation on an ongoing basis. So that's something definitely that we're seeing. And as they make land acquisitions, I think they're looking at the long-term feasibility of what's this going to mean to the operation. One of the things that I think is interesting that I see and hear is you're seeing a lot of baby boomer farmers that are in that strategic acquisition. So it's not just necessarily the 40 and under, or 40 to 50 age range, you're seeing the baby boomers. They're looking at what opportunities are out there, and understanding how they're going to transition that land over to the next generation is something the financially healthy farmers are really looking at when they make these acquisitions.
Okay. That's interesting. You know, a million years ago, Alan, when I worked on a project called Making the Family Farm the Family Business, in the marketing chapter that I wrote in there, I talked about goal-driven marketing. And when when you are making a decision because you understand that it is going to move, that it's going to advance you toward reaching a goal, it makes it so much easier to make that decision. The same thing in investing in your business. If if everything is pointed at that final goal, it brings clarity to what you're doing. It makes it easier for people to understand why they're out in the cold and the snow and trying to save a newborn calf. You know.
Yes. Yes, that cold weather, Chip, is not nearly as cold when they understand how that fits into the goal of the operation.
Exactly.
And I would say that what we're seeing with the financially healthy farmers, they do have a good understanding of their goals. And some of the things, Chip, that I see, one of their goals is better understanding their numbers, and not just the surface understanding, but going into the deep dive. For example, field by field profitability, not overall farm profitability. And where are they perhaps not maximizing revenue opportunities, and what land makes sense if it's rented land? What land makes sense to be able to be more competitive if they need to be on the rents? Or having that data also, Chip, helps them in discussion with landlords many times. Because a landlord may go to the coffee shop and hear numbers, but when they can see numbers relating to their own farm, I'm not saying it's always going to make a difference, but many times it can make a difference.
That's right.
I would also say that one of the goals is making sure that they're managing for profit versus yield, because there is a diminishing point of return on trying to keep that yield up. Yep. And candidly, at the end of the day, it's the profit that generates that.
Yep. Yep.
One of the other things, Chip, that I'll also say is I think the really financially healthy farmers, when it's time to look at equipment trades, they're looking at not what's the cost of the equipment, but what's my return. Because depending upon what you're trading today, if you're looking at a combine or a planter, the value that you may earn in additional revenue because of the increased technology in that planter or combine is certainly a factor that goes into the cost of trading. And I really like producers that come in, and when it's time to trade, they're not just talking about the cost of iron. Because if you look at a combine today, the cost of the technology could very well exceed the cost of the iron.
Yep.
So that's something that I will tell you that I think healthy farmers, financially healthy farmers, they're making that transition.
Right.
And
right.
really looking at it as their business.
Okay. Let's take a look at it from a different perspective. We know that there's always risk from the markets, but outside of the markets, what are the financial risks that these guys are facing right now?
Well, obviously going into 2022, we've seen input costs vary dramatically over what we saw in 21. And that is, I think, leading into their trying to decide, do I make fertilizer purchases this fall? Do I look long term, maybe it's spring? I think there's a big financial risk there, because in addition to the financial risk associated with that, we don't know about the availability risk either. So there's a little bit of a challenge there. I would say, Chip, one of the more understated financial risks many times is the cost of lack of a succession plan. And none of us are promised this afternoon versus tomorrow. And that succession plan being in place helps make sure that that farm is able to make that transition in the event of a death or a disability. And when you look at the volume of money that farms are handling and the amount of risk, I would tell you that succession planning is very much a financial risk if it's not there.
Okay.
I would tell you that also looking at with some of the things that are going on in the news, you know, understanding and having discussions with your accountant regarding what future tax rates might look like.
Yep.
I think that's important.
They've got a big plan also, that they're going to have to pay for, Alan.
they do, Chip. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think making sure that they understand that is extremely important.
Yep.
And looking also at making sure that they get their voices heard with their senators and representatives, because we want a place at the table. We don't want to be on the menu.
Good point. Good point, Alan. Great point, you know, and all are great points. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. That's Alan Hoskins. He is the president of American Farm Mortgage. Thanks, Alan.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, man, that soybean oil market blasting off today, pulling beans along with it.
Yeah, definitely. Soy oil, like you mentioned, just shooting to the upside. Some influence there from the crude oil market, which is sharply higher as well, but influencing soybeans, like you mentioned. And November soybeans working out a bullish reversal on the day. They're back to the five-day moving average. So if they push above that, we're probably likely to see some more buy stops picked off and shoot even higher to the upside intraday. But key, I think, now is can we hold these gains into the close, hold or extend them into the close, and or do we back off? And so the close today in soybeans is probably pretty critical to near-term price action.
Yeah, it's not pulling corn and wheat along, though. That's an issue.
Yeah, so the wheat market's the one that's kind of weighing down corn at the moment. Yeah, corn's kind of pulled up off its lows and trading just below unchanged thanks to the strength in soybean. But really, it's the wheat market that, and we aren't seeing heavy losses by any means at wheat, but just enough to keep corn under a little bit of price pressure here.
Okay, corn under a little bit of pressure has turned into some big gains in feeder cattle.
Yeah, definitely. That market has shot sharply to the upside, and that's had an influence on the live cattle market, which is trading slightly higher now. So we're seeing good solid strength across the cattle complex. Hogs, not so much. We're under pressure. So yesterday, the move down on the profit taking and pretty active follow through, moderate to sharp losses in the deferred contracts so far this morning.
Yeah, and we're keeping a real close eye on that cash market and the pork product there. And right now, it's not bringing a whole lot of support. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Florey. Glad that you are with us today. Davis Michelson is along as well.
Bro, you called it. You got it. You nailed it. 10-5 does mean to relay a message. That's good work.
I couldn't believe that.
Excellent recall.
I have no idea how I remembered that one. That was weird. Okay. And thank you, Tom. We will be following along with the rest of the 10 codes for the month of October. Shit, it might be fun.
Speaking of 10 codes, here's another fun one. 10-10.
Yeah.
available for calls. Just saying. Yeah. We are 1010. Beloved listeners, 1010.
Love it. Love it. All right. Hey, let's get to know Chris Edgington. He is the new president of the National Corn Growers Association. Chris, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. So how's your day going? You get that airbag fixed yet?
Not yet. I'm actually at the tire repair shop. He's just about done as I sit in the truck and watch him finish up. I told him I had to do an interview. And then my next stop is the airbag repair place. So, yeah, when the tire blew on the truck, she blew eloquently. She took all kinds of stuff with it, and I'm not even exactly sure when I did it last night, but definitely needed some repair work done this morning.
Wow. Yeah, well, when you put it to use and during harvest, things like that happen. And speaking of putting things to use during harvest, looks like you've had some really good help in the combine cab so far this year.
Yeah, obviously you're paying attention to my picture taking ability, which is terrible. but it's a good thing. It's a good thing that I've had a couple great riders, both in the combine cab and in the truck as well. And you know, that's one of the things that's so different than when I grew up or when my kids grew up. Is there's buddy seats now. There's car seats. You know, we can strap them in and feel comfortable that we got them with us. And you know, we used to get in the combine and ride with Dad, and you put the armrest down and you had to sit on that thing. Well, about two rounds, I'd had enough of that. He'd had enough of that. And, you know, and you were back out of there. Well, today they have designed our equipment for companion ridership.
Yep. It's really cool. Really cool to be able to do that. Chris, those young ones that are in the combine cab with you this fall, how much of a role did they play in preparing for the future in you getting on the path that has led you to being president of the National Corn Growers?
You know, it's a great question, and it's as I reflect on why I do this, and I've even asked my kids why I do this, and it is about the next generation. Our operation currently has three generations involved. My dad still is actively is out there. In fact, he is running a combine at the moment. And my brother and I have been farming together ever since we got out of school. And now I have a son and he has a daughter, and we've got some other family members around, and we have nieces and grandkids and all kinds of young ones that want to ride and be part of the process. And you know, it's part of why we do what we do. We're thinking about the next generation and how do we improve our operation so it's more efficient for the next generation.
Right. And Chris, you know, even if they're not the next generation of farmers, they are the next generation of consumers. And having that connection back to riding in the cab with Grandpa Chris or with Uncle Chris or whatever, that's going to pay dividends so greatly in the future.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and one of the things is we kind of talk with our kids and the grandkids about is you know, talk about what we do. Talk about our products. Because, you know, that's a challenge for a lot of farmers. The guys kind of put their head down, or the gals, and they focus on producing a crop, and they do a fantastic job of it. But we need to be good communicators as well. And this is why we run the nutrient management program we do. This is why we rotate with corn or soybeans or wheat or where, depends on where you're at. And what does that do for air quality, water quality, soil health? You know, it's an ever growing thing. And you're right. A bunch of these riders that we have in our operation will never come home to farm. But they will be consumers, and they will live in bigger communities, and they'll be able to talk about what we do.
Man, that's fantastic. Good stuff, Chris. Okay, so you've been a part of NCGA for quite some time, and in developing the NCGA goals, how comfortable are you with the current set of goals that you've got at NCGA, or are you going to be looking at mixing things up a little bit this year?
Well, you know, it's an ever evolving process. Yep. There's always things roll over from one to the next, and so our goals, they really don't change a lot. They're, you know, how do we improve productivity? How do we improve efficiency? How do we improve profitability? And then, how do we get, you know, a better message out to the consumer? And, you know, we do things with trade. We do things with ethanol. We're always engaged with WOTUS and conservation practices. And, you know, and before long, we'll be talking all about the Farm Bill again. So the options and the opportunities, they kind of roll from one year to the next. Now, I can tell you that one of our focuses is getting back together. Getting the team back together is kind of how I call it, and improving our teamwork and our messaging. Because, you know, with COVID, we had staff that was out of the office for over a year, and there's other organizations, their staff is still out of the office. And you just, it's tough to be creative. It's tough to be as active as we'd like to be if nobody's never in the office. And so, you know, part of our goal, and we're getting there, is let's just make sure we get our meetings going again in person. Face to face. If we have to mask up, we mask up. But our ability to interact with each other face to face is so much better on when we get in our issues than it is using Zoom. And Zoom's great technology. It worked this morning really well. But it's not the same as being in the room together, whether it's staff in the room with each other or grower members with them or you know, board members. It's that coming back together and working as a team and being part of the whole thing versus everybody being isolated in their houses, is a big focus we're working on.
Good. Okay. And the education effort when it comes to biofuels with some of the lawmakers that you've got to talk with, I'm sure that it's easier to get your point across when you're in the same room with them as well, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've had some great conversations with some legislators and representatives and administrators on Zoom. And we will continue to do that because it does allow you to be maybe in multiple meetings fairly rapid fire. But yes, being face-to-face to talk about why ethanol is so good for the consumer, so good for the environment. It's here and now. It's great for trade because it's something we don't have to import. And why... you know, the sustainability platform that we work on and all that, to do it in person is definitely to the next a step up from doing it on Zoom.
Yeah. And I got to believe for you personally, Chris, up in your area, St. Ansgar, I got to believe that biofuel and supporting ethanol is right close to the top of the priority list for you, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge piece. And, you know, within 50, 60 miles, I've got a half a dozen ethanol plants. And so it's a big demand. We also have a lot of livestock. We have a lot of pigs. We have a lot of cattle. And both of them utilize, and actually there's not too far away, there's some fairly large land hen facilities. They all utilize corn in one form or another. The cattle industry has embraced dry distillers grains coming out of these ethanol plants. With an abundance of enjoyment. The trucks are hauling that product out every single day to the cattle feedlots, and it's become a feed of choice that they want to have every day in their cattle rations.
Have I noticed an effort at NCGA, Chris, to reconnect or rebuild, but you're really making a big deal out of the feed side of the corn market again, right?
Well, I think we always do, but you're right. It's maybe more evident. We're a little bit more out there. We're doing a lot with the cattlemen and the National Cattle Beef Association on education of their cattle feeders and consumers around, you know, the products that they're, how this all works. And so, yeah, maybe we're just out there a little more. I think that effort has always been there in the background with pork and beef and poultry. But we're maybe joint messaging out there a little more for the consumer.
Gotcha. Yeah, when I was pro farmer editor and doing a bunch of seminars, Chris, we always did livestock at the end of the market outlook segments. And there'd be a handful of guys that would get up and start to leave, and I just just holler at them and say, sit down. We're talking about the guys that are using your products that you're growing. Doesn't matter if you don't have cattle and hogs. You still need to know what's going on in those industries so that you can support them. And we've got to support the end users out there, man.
Right. You know, and livestock's the biggest consumer we've got. Between the domestic consumption and the international consumption on exports, livestock is our number one customer, no question. So, understanding what they're going through, the times they've been in, and you know they'll go through things that are out of their control, just like we go through things with the weather that are out of our control.
Right, that's right, Chris. This was fun. I'm really looking forward to many more conversations with you over the course of the year. Good luck to you, man.
Yeah, thank you, and we will have a lot of good conversations coming ahead.
You bet. All right, that's Chris Edgington. He is the new president of the National Corn Growers Association. He's up in St. Ansgar, Iowa, northeast Iowa. It's even north of me in northeast Iowa.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
As always, it looks like NCGA's got another good one in there with Chris Edgington, new president at NCGA. He sees why he's doing what he is doing every day on the farm. And I think that is so important, to have the reason so apparent to you when he's got three generations working on the same farm, mm-hmm. and a fourth or the next in the wings waiting to come in.
Yes.
I think that's so cool.
And such good perspective really cool. on, hey, you know what? They may not wind up farming one day, but it's still a hugely important part of their lives.
Right.
As it has been for you and me. You know, I rode on plenty of fenders in my day.
Darn right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And then to have someone that the ethanol industry has had such a unbelievable impact on him. I mean, St. Ansgar 15 years ago was a black hole of basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The basis stunk in that area for a long time. And now he's got a half a dozen plants within 50 or 60 miles.
Yep.
Man, oh man, that's a big reason why there is profitability in farming in that part of the world. Okay.
Yep.
Important message to get to. And we have got Dr. Bea Lasky, who is the Chief Medical Director of Biomedical Services at the American Red Cross with us. Dr. Lasky, thank you so much for making time.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Okay. We continue to hear about a blood shortage. What is the status of the nation's blood supply?
Yes, you're right. The American Red Cross and really the whole country is experiencing an emergency blood shortage right now. And our inventory is actually the lowest it's been for this time of year since 2015. And we have less than a day's supply of many blood types.
Okay, what happened? Is this, I would imagine that it's somehow COVID related one way or another, is it?
Absolutely. We've had to shift a lot during the course of the pandemic. Of course, we have just experienced a surge in COVID cases in August, which has impacted donor turnout, which has we've seen a decrease in about by about 10% since August. So that's impacting us. We've got individuals heading back to in-person learning. Schools and businesses may be resuming normal activities, so people are going to work. But we've also been challenged with the typical places where we do run drives are not necessarily opening their businesses or schools to us because of COVID restrictions. So we're just fall is usually a time when we're starting to make up for summer shortages. And right now we are just not experiencing the normal rebound that we would usually see at this time.
Okay. Couple of questions that I feel like we got to ask just because of the situation that we're in. Does it make a difference if you are vaccinated or unvaccinated?
It does not. Individuals who have received the COVID vaccine are eligible. We do need to know what type it is. But both vaccinated and unvaccinated are eligible, provided people are feeling well and healthy. There are certain donor eligibility criteria which we would go through if people are interested in donating.
Okay, so if I receive the Moderna and I give blood, can someone that received the J&J receive that blood?
There is no incompatibility. In fact, okay. Labeling is not even required by the FDA.
Okay, good. Good. Boy, that's good to know. Okay, excellent. Yes. What about if you've had COVID or not? If you've had COVID, you can still give, right?
Absolutely. Again, we just want to make sure that people are coming in, that they're healthy and well for their own health and for the safety of our, you know, donor center and donor environment. But absolutely, if people are recovered, they are welcome to donate.
Dr. Lasky, what is your message to someone that has never given blood before? And it's always been in the back of their mind that, doggone it, someday I need to start doing that. What's your message to them?
Yes. So, you know, what people may not realize is that blood donation and blood transfusion is an essential part of healthcare. And we are right now in need of about 10,000 additional blood products each week above and beyond the normal to overcome the current shortage. And blood transfusions are used for patients who have experienced trauma or burn, cancer patients, those undergoing cardiac surgery, organ transplant, or a blood disorder such as sickle cell disease. So there's a wide spectrum of patients that are desperately in need, whose lives are literally depending on the blood that are on the shelves today. So our concern is that the hospitals and physicians will not have the blood for the patients when they need it.
Okay. What about platelet donation? Obviously, I would think that you're still looking for that as well.
Absolutely. For red cells, we are most in need of the blood types O. O negative is universal and is used in trauma type situations commonly, and O positive is nearly universal and is the most commonly transfused blood type. And then we are also always in need of platelet donations of all blood types. And actually, for platelets, which are involved in the clotting process, and which can prevent or stop life-threatening bleeding in cancer patients and trauma patients, we need to collect those every day. They only last for 5 days, so we have a constant need for platelets.
Okay, if I'm interested in donating, Dr. Lasky, where do I go to find out where the next blood drive is?
Yes, so we have some blood drives coming up in the Midwest region. Right now we've got through October 7th in the Iowa State University. We also have coming up in October 10th through 15th in South Dakota in the Arlington, Summit, Florence, Waterton, and Tea areas. And then Nebraska, we have the Holiday Inn Express and YMCA in the Sioux City area on October 22nd. And then in Beatrice, Nebraska, October 27th and 28th. And for those don't work, we always visit our website, redcrossblood.org, that can direct people to the nearest location.
Perfect. Dr. Lasky, thank you so much from American Red Cross. Chip Nellinger this afternoon.